Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover Show. This is Steve Marks and Wade Wagner, and I'm Brent.
Welcome, Brent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
For doing that intro, we'll see you around. Thanks right, for being yeah. on the show. Yeah, that was really great.
Now we've got a good show. We've actually got Brent back joining us once again.
Make it a habit, though.
Yeah, we'll try not to.
That's right. We do it. We do it only as much as we're obligated to contractually.
Yes.
It's part of his MVP, Windows Azure
it's a special
sort of thing.
Engine.
Yeah, I promise I will burn the evidence this time, though.
But he's going to talk about page blobs, which is cool because
we haven't
page blobs
really covered it.
They're fantastically useful. Everyone uses them when they use Windows Azure Drives, and then they never use them any other way. And it's kind of sad because page blobs have a lot to offer. Just give them a chance. Mm-hmm. So, Brent's going to tell us all about that. But before that, we're going to do the news, and we're going to wrap up with a tip about counting things because that's
one,
really exciting.
Two, three. Yeah. So, all right. So the news. So Michael Collier has posted about using Service Bus from Windows Phone 7. It's a good blog post because one of the things he notes is that you don't have the .NET APIs for the Windows Phone 7 device where you can just very easily connect to the Service Bus and use it to get your access control service token and all these types of things. So he walks through the process of how you actually will write the request to connect to the ACS service and essentially grab back a token that you can use to present to the Service Bus when you're making your connections. So there's not anything necessarily new because from the phone he's still using Silverlight in order to communicate to the Service Bus. So a lot of the same constraints and things that you'll have to do to get Silverlight communicating to the Service Bus work. I think the pivot that's interesting here is making the request via HTTP to get that access control service token. So it's a good blog post. Definitely take a look at it if you're looking to use Service Bus from Windows Phone.
It's also probably one of those things where even if you have the nice convenient methods that you've been using to do it, it's sometimes good to read through what actually
happens. What's
actually
happening.
And so this is sort of another way to do that. Instead of reading some dense documentation about the protocol, you just see an example of it sort of re-implemented, which is handy.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So good job, Michael.
Mm-hmm. We're contractually obligated.
It's an MVP thing again.
We have to show blog posts and stuff.
So auto-scaling Windows Azure applications. This is another interesting one. There's not an implementation per se here on, here's some code you can write for auto-scaling. But Gregory?
Gregory. Yeah.
So he's on the PNP team, Patterns and Practices, and they are looking at building some auto-scaling, libraries and stuff as part of the enterprise library for Windows Azure. And this is a discussion of really kind of what would you need to analyze and look at in order to make intelligent decisions about when you need to scale or auto-scale. And so if you go through it, if you scroll down a little bit as you go, he's got a really nice analysis of, various things to take a look at. What are some of the pivots and rules that you might consider? So it's a good analysis, good discussion. And so it'll be interesting to see what they end up producing.
And they're definitely open to feedback at this point, too. I think there have been some parts of this have sort of been prototyped and tried out, but they're far from having something done and implemented and shipped.
They're saying fall.
Very open to this. So, fall's like now, right? Well, so they're done.
It is in Minnesota.
they've absolutely. That's pretty soon in Minnesota. But send feedback, particularly around. I know there was just an email thread that I was on with Gregory that was about the rules and sort of what the indicators are that you want, how you want to express those rules. And so they're still very much open to that. So it's also, if you want to read about it, it's very interesting. But then if you have some reactions to it, be sure to pass those along because they're very open.
Yeah, because it's the enterprise library, it's extensible. You can modify it, do what you want with it. So good stuff.
The Slalom Consulting blog. So this is another nice post on not only using MS Build and TFS to do automation for building and deploying Windows Azure projects, but if you take a look at it, he's essentially taken some other patterns other folks have defined via blogs and extended it to use some of the new support in the 1.4 tools for Visual Studio. So if you slide down a little bit, you'll note that he makes use of multiple configuration files for the CFCFG so that he can define different configurations for each of the environments that he might be doing deployments to. So I think you'll see here he's got debug, test, prod. And so each one of those CFCFG files will have a different configuration based on you know, that environment and, you know, what resources they're mm-hmm. using. So a great way to kind of implement this and get it set up, whether you're doing, you know, continuous integration and you wanna do some kind of build of, I don't know, whatever it might be, however your consulting company or development shop yep. Operates. But definitely, it's a nice post walking through all the steps in order to get that taken care of. So who's this guy?
Yeah, I don't know. So I think we mentioned before, I'm from Sagetti USA. We're a consulting firm. We actually had a program we started last year. We're going to be doing it again this next year, called the Azure Privilege Club.
Mm. Ooh.
Sounds very prestigious.
Yeah. You get a special card.
Yeah, you get a special. Well, it's more about bringing companies together. So a lot of times, you know, everybody develops their own technology and they sit in their little silo and they don't want to share information. This is an attempt for us to help bring our customers together to share the learning experiences they're having. So, you know, company A can learn from company B, but do it in a way that's not feeling threatening, where they don't have to feel like they're, you know, breaking any rules about proprietary secrets or what have you. Mm. It also allows us to bring them closer to the Microsoft product team. So we bring in our own experts. We connect them with some of the folks at Microsoft. It's actually a joint program. Great little opportunity. If folks are interested, email me. So
excellent.
We'll see how things go.
Cool.
Kind of a segue into that. So I'm actually here in Bellevue. I'm doing some work for a client downtown, and I've been doing training, getting their folks up to speed on what Windows Azure is, how do you work with it. And I got hit with a question that I hadn't been hit with, and that somebody wanted to see a demo of page blobs. Now, most of the time you go out and you say, here's a blob, you do the block blobs, I'm just streaming a file up into it, thank you, have a nice day, move on, let's talk about tables. So there aren't a lot of examples out there of page blobs. There's a few, but I kind of wanted to put my own spin on it and talk about it. So I started off playing with uploading it and trying to demonstrate what was actually happening, how you're managing the pages at a time. And then later on that same day, I got a question from somebody else on that team about wanting to have the ability to upload a file, but at the same time start pulling it down so something can start processing on it. Because they'll process files that can be a couple hundred megabytes in size, and you don't want to wait 5 to 10 minutes yep. for the whole thing to come up, and then 5 to 10 minutes to pull it back down into another process. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking, well, I had the question on page blobs. Page blobs are all about random access, so it seemed like there was a bit of a synergy there that while I'm uploading it, I should be able to simultaneously download it. So I started off last week, wrote a blog post on how to just do a simple little upload deal that actually runs through the individual pages, increments through them and lets you do it. So the trick was to write the receiver for it, and that's what I wanted to demo today, was kind of talk about, you know, the transmitter and the receiver, our own little transporter engine, if you will.
Nice.
Let's explain, let's do one sort of brief, like, what is a page blob and what are the operations on it, because I'm not sure that everybody has that already. And I think page blobs are actually really simple, and we can give this to people in a sentence or two, right? It's going to be more than that. But page blobs are basically pre-allocated sort of blobs. You specify size up front, you get some chunk of space, and it's broken logically into pages of 512 bytes. You can write, up to 4 megabytes at a time, but always sort of aligned to page boundaries. Everything's yep. aligned to page boundaries. And you can write anywhere in that thing, and you can read anywhere. And so the APIs are basically, you know, around creating the blob. There's writing a range of pages, and then on the reading side, you can just like with block blobs or any blobs, you can read a range also. You can do a range of bytes. And so that, in a nutshell, did I miss anything important? I think that's what a page blob is. It's different from a block blob in that it's got these 512 chunks, and you can sort of write to any of them. In a block blob, you can create blocks and stitch them together, but it's, you know, they're different sizes, and you have to actually manually sort of put them together all at mm-hmm. once, and so and you can't read it until it's all sort of done.
The stitch has to be done, and then it's visible.
So. Right, right. And so, all right, with that, I didn't mean to sort of throw off the demo, but I just wanted to make sure people knew those concepts going in.
Okay, so we've got two parts of the demo. I've got the transmitter, which is on my left, and the mm-hmm. receiver, which is on my right. Hopefully that'll come out okay on the final video.
We're zoomed into this right now.
Oh, we're zoomed into this?
Okay. Well,
is this code big enough? I know I had problems with that last time.
Nope.
So you know, we're going to skip over this top part. We're just doing some setup here. I'm creating a name for my blob. I'm actually getting a file that's included as part of the demo project, and this will all be uploaded to my blog so folks can snag it. And I'm converting the file over into a stream so I can actually read it. A little hidden block here. We actually go through, you know, I'm doing everything off of development storage just to make it simple. So we create an account, I get a blob storage client off of there. I create a container, and I make sure I create it if I don't exist. You know, just standard things you'd be doing in working with a blob. Yep. The challenge here is I then actually start creating the page blob. So I'll get a reference to the blob. I'll give it, you know, a content type. I know I'm uploading an image, so I'm doing that static. I'm going to add a meta tag to it. Okay, and we'll get to why I'm doing this in a moment. But I'm going to make it the length of the actual stream or the file I'm uploading. And then I'm also going to allocate the actual size. Now, up until I execute this create command, I haven't actually hit storage at all yet. Everything's been happening locally. This create will go out to the storage account and actually create and reserve the size that I have dictated. In this case, I'm going a little over twice the size of the file I want to upload, just so we can talk about later about how resizing a blob can be done after it's actually been built.
And so at this point, there's actually a page blob. Like, if I went use some tool and download, there is a blob that exists that that create is just full of 23,000 some zeros.
Yeah, here's the container that we're working with. There's nothing in it right now. If I actually run over here, we cross our fingers and hope demos work. Yeah.
So now there should be a page blob.
Yep, do the refresh. And you'll see it already has a size
now. Look at the size. Yep.
Even though I haven't uploaded anything to it, if I try to actually open the file, nothing there. It's technically empty, and even though it exists at this point, because there is nothing in it, I'm not being charged.
Yeah.
I've reserved capacity, but
one thing
I
failed at as I was explaining page blobs, which now is it's a good time to bring it up. I mean, I left it for this because this
exactly.
was a good
was
opportunity.
Yep.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I did that on purpose. Is that page blobs? So right now there is a page blob and it's of size 23,552 bytes,
which has to be a multiple of 512. That's
how
our page
sizes. I just did the math and something around that size. So it's that big, but there's a difference between sort of the allocated space versus the like valid page ranges. And so we actually keep track as you're writing to the page blob of which pages have actually been written to versus which ones are sort of still untouched. And remember I said there were zeros all through that blob. That's what's there if it's not a if it's a page that has never been written to. There are sort of logically zeros in there. We don't actually write the zeros anywhere because there's sort of no point to that. And that's why you don't get charged for any space. That's why you can do, like when you're using a Windows Azure drive, you can allocate like a 2 terabyte drive. And if you never actually write much data to it, it won't actually end up costing you very much money to store because you're only charged for those valid ranges. Now, if you went and wrote a bunch of zeros, now we'd save the zeros and we'd charge you for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's why sometimes when you see tools that do page blob uploads, they skip contiguous blocks of zeros. Yep. And that's why, because there's no reason to do the data transfer of the zeros. And there's no reason to start paying for zeros.
Yep. And it's always rounded up to the nearest page, because once you put something into a page, that whole 512 block is kind of yours.
Yeah, that's right.
So, okay. So back to the demo for a moment. I've got a couple of watches down in here that we're going to check out as this runs. Let me make sure I got my breakpoint down here at the bottom of it. So before we run through, you know, we've created our blob. I'm now actually taking the stream to our file image, just resetting it to the beginning, and I'm creating a buffer. Now, in this case, it's only 512 because I just want to write a single page at a time for the sake of this demo. It's important when you're dealing with a page blob to pick the right size for what the operation you're doing. This file's only 13K, so I could write it in one write because you can get up to 14 or 4 meg per write. So I'm just doing that. A couple of counters to keep track of where I'm at to make sure as I iterate through here I'm reading things properly. And we're just going to keep doing that while I have stream to write. So as I hit F5 on this, you'll notice I've now written one page. I can hit F5 on this a couple of times. We keep writing things. If we check the storage account out, you'll notice there's no change in the size of the file. And you start to see it materialize. Our transporter is going into the buffer now.
That's really cool that the file format is such that it works like that.
Yeah.
I had no idea that's what was going to happen, is that you'd see part of the image.
Yep. So while we've still got that one up, let's jump over to the receiver here. It does a lot of the same things up at the top. We're going to set up a storage account. We're going to get the container there. We're going to make sure we create the container if it doesn't exist. And now we're going to fall in and we're going to start iterating through the blobs that are in that container.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I picked up a little tip from one of the other MVPs, Neil McKenzie. We've got kind of some linky syntax going on here, so I'm only getting the cloud blobs out of there, because if I try doing some of these operations on page blobs, it'll puke. So I've restricted down what I'm retrieving. And we're also having to do an extra command to fetch attributes. Mm-hmm. So remember how we set a meta tag when I created the blob? Well, I want to retrieve that because that tells me exactly how big the file is.
Right.
Because we're dealing with pages, they have to be increments of 512. My image isn't an even 512. So when I'm reading it back out, I need to know when to stop reading that stream, and this attribute is what will tell me. So I do a fetch to make sure I get all the meta tags, and then I will actually use that down below to set the number of bytes that I'm going to write when I pull this out and put it to a file. We set up a file stream to write it to, and then we drop in to say, okay, while I still have stuff to write, we're going to start incrementing through the page ranges.
Right, and these are those right. These are the ranges that have been written to. Right, this is the part of the page blob that actually has data that's been written, not just the zeros of the unallocated space.
Yep. So if we run the receiver now, and hopefully it won't puke. Ta-da! It didn't.
And then how many times did we run through in loop? Was that about four times?
About five.
Five.
So we've got five blocks we've written through there. Let me hide these console apps. So if we check in here, we can look at our page range. Oh, actually, just right there. So it shows you. We had the 259, mm-hmm. which it's zero index,
it's zero
so it's the
yep.
same
yep.
same amount.
Yep,
there.
So same number. Yep.
And we're going to read. We're going to say, okay, I haven't done anything yet, so I know I have new data I can pull down. And if I loop through this little chunk of code, I'll make sure I got my breaks points in the right spot. We'll just F5 down to it, and you'll see I've now read some bytes. We've got more stuff to read, and I just keep looping through that, and you'll see it eventually starts incrementing.
Yep.
All right, if I let that keep going, let's just remove that page, that break. So at this point, I've finished reading my initial range. My mm-hmm. values are now equal.
Yep.
Now, if I just let this sit here, it just keeps coming back to the sleep because nothing more
nothing
has, been,
has
written.
Been written.
If I flip over to the receiver and write another page or two, now let this one resume. Oh, no, I don't want to stop. I want to go. We're back in and we're starting to write more data, and it'll do that until it's written all of that. And then eventually I can just pull this completely off. It's written everything it had to write. Pull that one completely off. And he's now terminated. And if I open up the folder for that, there is the reassembled image has now been fully transported.
Nice.
One thing to go back and note, though, and this is part of what I liked about this demo. You notice the last time we looked at the blob image, it was 23 kilobytes in size. Well, when I finished, it reduced, and that's part I said I wanted to mention was being able to resize the blob based on your needs. Now, in my case, I went big and shrunk it. Mm. Maybe you're uploading a stream and you don't know how big the stream is, so you might allocate a certain size and then increase it. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, so is this because the transmitter is like Wonka Vision, where after it sends it, it actually makes it smaller on the other side? No.
I chose it just to help demonstrate.
I'm so disappointed. and yet also so proud.
That's our a cappella song for the day. All right, so I wanted to do that to help illustrate a piece of code that I hadn't seen before, that when I was building this, I ran across. It's actually something the Azure Storage team had put out a while ago, and it talks about using the REST API to actually do the resizing. So simple code, go out and look at it. I'm not going to talk about it too much here other than this is not something that's supported via the .NET managed client. You actually have to write the REST call to go out and do this. When you resize it, it still has to be a multiple of 512.
Yep.
Right. And this just happens to be just a little bit bigger than my actual blob size.
Now, and to be clear, in this demo, one of the reasons you made the allocation larger was really just to be able to demonstrate this.
Yep.
It's not there was no other rationale.
Because in this case, we know the size
ahead
of time. We could just allocate the right size sort of page blob.
But I just want to make sure that that's clear. I mean, this is a nice little snippet here.
Yeah, and it's the
I just
same
allocate.
With the,
I make all my page blobs 2 terabytes.
Yeah.
And then that's the max, right? I forgot to check before I said that. It's 2 terabytes.
It's either 1 or 2 terabytes. Yeah.
So you could just do that. You don't pay for the zeros anyway, and so just do that, and then.
Can you do that more than one? Could you create multiples that are all 2 terabytes or would it, mm-hmm. per storage account?
Because until you actually put stuff in it, it doesn't count against your storage quota, I think.
I wonder.
We might have to call somebody.
I don't know.
But you have 100 terabytes for storage, so you could at least fit like 50 of them in. Right. I don't know if you...
We might have to make a phone call because I'm sure it's not going
to
test that one.
I want to know.
Let's try it.
I'm
going to
try it.
Card?
I'll try it. I've got free access to all this stuff.
The other important one to call out, I know we mentioned it, is for demo purposes, I'm using the minimum page size of 512 for each write and read. Make sure you pick a number that's optimal from you, because from a transaction standpoint, this is not optimal performance, but it does do a good job of illustrating hitting the pages.
Yep. Excellent.
That's cool. Very cool. I want to make sure I call out one last thing because it's I think we said it, but I want to make sure people get it. That page blob is now 12 point whatever. It's some multiple of 512 bytes, yep. Despite the fact that the actual content isn't.
Right.
Which means we really have a page blob in there that that I think will work as a JPEG, right? Mm-hmm. But
so, there's my meta tag, which has no bearing on it other than its additional detail.
Right, so it should be 12.6. That's sort of the... Yep. And now, a JPEG is sort of tolerant, it seems, to there being some zeros at the end. The point I want to make is that, all that aside, is that there are some zeros at the end, that if you actually just downloaded this full page blob, you would see something of a multiple of 512 bytes mm-hmm. with some zeros at the end. Because the actual file content isn't that size. And so here, Brent's managing it in his code by keeping track of metadata that says, like, the actual size.
Right. Yeah.
And so if you're using page blobs for things like regular files, where you don't have control over how big they are and if they happen to be page aligned, that's a good technique. Like, always keeping something with the blob that keeps track of that means you'll never be confused about, are there some zeros that are actually legitimately there at the end of the file, or is that just extra space? When people use this for a VHD, for Windows Azure Drive, it's not a problem. You just allocate a size that's sort of the right size, that's a 512 byte aligned, and then you're fine. But if you're using it for regular-ish files, to make sure you don't have some weird corruption, I've seen people run into problems with this. Make sure you keep track of that, and you just truncate files if you download them.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Very cool.
No problem. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Before we get to the introduction to the tip of the week, we're going to be talking about tables. So let's pull up a blog post real quick. So if you go to bing.com real quick.
I think that's my default search engine in here.
It's good, good. All right. So then do Smarks and then tables, because I know he's blogged about this a lot. Let's slide down a little bit. It's not those. Wait a minute. What is this? Smarks Poker Player. Wait, no, who is Smarks?
Oh, there we go.
What is this? What is going on, Steve? Who is Smarks?
He's
evidently this guy.
It seems like that was completely spontaneous.
It was.
And you just happened
just
to be
amazing.
Searching.
I did a search on Smarks and tables.
Found this
is not an endorsement of organized gambling.
That is correct. Disorganized. Unorganized? Is that the word?
Steven Marks.
Much better.
Wow, look at that. This is some high stakes.
Yes. For people who don't know, poker is a horrible habit of mine, but
in fact, you were on ESPN, right?
I was on ESPN for like 30 seconds or so back in 2005 playing poker.
Excellent.
Wade and I took a poker trip. We didn't talk about
this
yet on the show.
That's true, we didn't talk
about this, yeah. But, and I think it's important for people who are customers of the Windows Azure platform to know that Wade and I took a trip to a casino and played some poker.
Yes, a cash game.
And I really showed him up because I lost less than half as much money.
But in twice the amount. It took twice the amount of time.
It did take longer.
Yeah, so I think the fun way to say it is I lost twice as much money in half the time.
Right, which is a lot more efficient. So, yeah, okay, fine, you win.
I would have been sitting at the bar watching both of
you. It was actually really impressive. Steve sits down at this table, very first hand, just takes an enormous pot with a, what did you get, a straight on the river?
Yep.
Pretty gutsy.
Yeah. We call that Plan B for people who play poker. Plan A was for the guy to fold. Plan B was for me to make a straight. And Plan B worked out fine. So that was good, and then it was all downhill from there. Okay, I don't know how that's relevant, but it is a good lead-in.
We're talking about tables.
We are talking about tables, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit.
Right, we're now going to transition into the introduction to the tip of the week.
See. And
I think some
to
kind
queue
of
up.
Poker theme with Steve, I think, makes a lot of sense this time.
I understand.
And I think with some creative searching, we can find some fun pictures too of this. So with that, here's your tip of the week.
All right,
and
I'm scared to see that. So here's what we want to talk about for this tip of the week is counting stuff, specifically counting rows in tables.
Yeah. This actually came up on a thread internally on a distribution list.
Yeah.
How do I go about counting the number of rows I have in a table.
I'd say this comes, I see this question like once a month or so that somebody asks it. And actually, less times, it happens less frequently as time goes on because people go and find the answer already. The basic answer is, well, you can't do it. We don't count stuff in table storage.
Right.
That's the, so if you just try what you might do on some, if you're using like a regular like OData endpoint for something, you might just do .count at the end of your query. It'll get sent as like a $count operator or something like that to the server in the URL, and the server will count everything up and tell you the answer. Table storage won't do that. The why is sort of around, well, massive, huge tables with, I mean, to actually find the count involves spanning servers and where, I mean, it's much harder than you'd think to actually get the count.
And I think actually having the count is something that the team has heard as feedback. And
we might deliver this at some point. With some other sort of simple aggregates and stuff. That's stuff that we've talked about wanting to do. But we don't have it today. And so today you cannot ask table storage to count your rows for you, which means you have to do something. And there are really two flavors of options. One is to do the count yourself.
Yep.
And for that, what I would recommend is take your query, stick dot as table service query on it, as you should always do, because that'll make sure that continuation tokens are followed. Then do dot execute, which actually will start the enumeration locally, and then do a dot count. So the dot execute turns it into something that's operated on locally, as opposed to trying to send the query to the cloud. And then the dot count will actually work. It'll just sort of burn through those enumerate and do this. What I don't recommend is doing dot to list and then doing count, because toList will actually bring everything down locally first. So you'll allocate all the memory for storing your tens of thousands of rows or whatever in memory, and then once they're all there, you'll just count them and throw them out, which is kind of dumb.
Whereas you actually dug into execute, and it does some sort of lazy loading of it,
right?
So that it doesn't pull everything down at once.
Execute just loads sort of page at a time of, you know, like 1,000 is the maximum you can get from table storage at a time. So it'll load 1,000 at a time, and then you'll be operating locally. And when you hit the end of it, it'll just get more. So it's just lazy.
And it still may take a while, given how many rows you may have in the table.
Yeah, exactly.
So which leads us to
that
option
leads
two.
Us to the second one, right? Because if that's a very large number, that will be slow. And you're transferring all the. It's important to note that you're transferring the whole row every. It's not just. So there's
you're
no projection or whatever.
Costs.
So you're actually you're basically doing the work of copying the entire table locally just to find out how many rows you have.
And that's where you'd start adapting the NoSQL type techniques where maybe I have another table that just keeps track of the number of rows that are in a table.
Exactly.
So then you just query that at any time.
Right. So keep track yourself, and that means every time you do an insert or a delete, you want to change that number. You could just go change the number. But under high concurrency, you're probably going to run into a sort of optimistic concurrency issues there. Somebody will update the number while someone else is doing it, and now somebody will fail because the writes happen at the same time.
So now they're putting their incrementers over in SQL Azure instead of an Azure Stream.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could actually do that, right? I mean, if you have something where you can do an atomic increment, which you can do, you can do that in caching, I suppose, but there you might lose the data at some point because it's volatile. But, you can use SQL for that or something else. Yep. You can also serialize everything sort of through a queue. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing is everybody who writes just plops a message on a queue.
And
somebody in the other time pulls the messages off the queue 32 at a time and puts them in. We kind of talked about these patterns when we did our thing on scalable counters.
The apathy button was
which
the demo
I had nothing plan. Involved in helping escalate
true.
The
That's
account
true.
Of that.
Right.
We had some people in the background
culprit.
Just like shooting out a bunch of requests.
Me and Corey made the mistake of sitting in the same room at a training session when that show was being recorded.
Because it really looked like that button got popular. Because you know, we were keeping track of time.
I think
I still have the code that we used.
We did talk about an approach through queues to keep track of that for.
So basically, either you're going to have to bring everything down to count it, or you're going to have to keep track yourself. And those are really the two flavors of options. Mm-hmm. There are a few ways to do that.
Excellent.
Cool. All right.
Well, thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Can I do a small prop shout out?
Of course.
I want to say thanks to the guys on the media manager team. They're the ones I'm working with this week, and the reason I'm here that allowed me to also be here. So
excellent.
Thank them also because they brought you to us.
Yep. Here.
On that note, as always, you can tweet to us at Cloud Cover Show. You're at Brent Code Monkey.
Yep. Which is different than the blog, which is Brent the Code Monkey.
Yeah, see, that's why I always
Twitter wouldn't allow me enough characters. So.
Okay, so Brent Code Monkey. So if you want to give him any feedback, you can do that. If you just want to ask, make some requests for us to cover on the show, just at Cloud Cover Show. Until next time.
Great, thanks. Thank you.